It's nice to have our visitors with us. Welcome. What we've done is we've embarked upon a series of lessons about Christian finances, and this is the second in this series. It will probably be somewhere around eight lessons, and maybe a couple more. And tonight we're going to be talking about contentment. And I initially thought that we might break this up into and combine a couple more, but as I began to study more about the topic of contentment, it's such a foundational component of Christian finances. And if you remember last week, we established that we wanted to, that our study goal over these next series of weeks was going to be to become successful Christ-centered stewards of God's resources in our lives, and thus good representatives of our faith. And I think that again, what we've tried to do last week is we've tried to begin to set a foundation on what these series of lessons are really going to be about. The first thing we talked about last week, just in context, just how these lessons will unfold over the next several weeks, is initially on the left-hand side, how do we get to financial freedom and contentment, really is going to be a series of lessons that how do we have financial peace of mind, and it's more spiritually based. We need to set a strong foundation and have that as solid to be able to make good decisions in our lives. Recognizing last week we talked about that 100% of everything that we have is God's. And when we start remembering that as the foundation, and we begin to say that we need to be looking at an eternal perspective, and that, you know, unity with our spouse is very important. We find that this is one of the top issues in marriages, the use of money. When we make decisions, they should be faith-based. They should be grounded in the Bible. And we should be able to look to the Bible to give us and point us to those stakes in the ground and those principles that we're going to apply to the resources God has entrusted us with. And then we need to recognize that our security in our life is in Christ, not in money, not in possessions. And lastly, again, that we should seek out not only financial counselors in this world that God has allowed us to engage with, but it's also good to look at your pastor as a person you can go to. And he should know these biblical principles and help us when we have these types of struggles in our marriage and our lives. And then the second part of these lessons will be the tools that we have in the world that can allow us to be good stewards of the resources that God has entrusted us with. So we're going to start tonight, we're going to talk about contentment. So what does contentment mean? What does it mean to be content, and how would you define the word?
Satisfied?
Okay.
No worries?
I like that. Others? One definition is rest or quietness of the mind in one's present condition. No worries. Satisfied. Does this mean that you can be content even if you're in financial ruin? Well, it sounds easy, doesn't it? Yeah. But some things to think about when we look at this definition here. Notice that the definition doesn't talk about a goal that has to be achieved. Sometimes, you know, when we're to be content, you know, I've got to achieve something. I've got to have something set out there that I've got to have. But that doesn't say that. A rest or a quietness is of what? The mind. To me, that strikes me as an attitude, that no matter what type of situation you find yourself in, whether it's from a financial standpoint of view, or even some of the challenges we go through in our daily lives that we wouldn't necessarily want to go through, with God's grace, He can get us through any type of a situation we have. And I think that we can have quietness, we can have peace of mind, if we put our thoughts and our goals in God's hands and keep our eyes on Him. But when you stop and think about this, there's this competition for God's love. If you remember last week, remember the overhead that I put up that in 1 Timothy 6:10, for the love of money is the root of all evil.
And you remember the graphic that showed the wedge coming between man and God? And we talked last week that there's over 2,300 verses in the Bible that talk about money. And we talked that it's more than the topic of prayer. And what's important about that, I think, is that really God knows that our desire, our sin nature, and our desire to have things was going to be something that we were going to struggle with in our life. And I think that when we stop and we think about this competition, it is really a competition between our love of this world and our love for God. In 1 John 2:15 through 17, it says, "Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For everything in the world, the cravings of sinful man, the lust of his eyes, and the boasting of what he has and does, comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but the man who does the will of God lives forever." Now, what I think is important about this is that this establishes that principle that this really is about a competition for who do we love. Because it talks about, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And then it talks about three things here. It talks about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. And why I think that's really important is that these three elements that are talked about here, and again, this is the New International Version. If you look in the King James Version, you're going to find the three terms that I used. Is what's important, if you go back to Matthew, the fourth chapter, you're going to find Christ was tempted in the wilderness. And he was tempted as are we. And if you look at that example there in Matthew, you're going to find that he was tempted with these three things. Adam and Eve were also tempted in the garden with these three things. And so from the very beginning of time of Adam and Eve, and all the way up to now, we have been tempted by Satan. This is how Satan tests us. He tests us and tempts us through our senses. And he is the ruler of this world. And so when we talk about this being a competition for love, I truly believe that this is what this is about. This is about, do we love God? God loved us so much and was so important to him that he sent his only begotten Son. He sacrificed his Son because he loved us so much. And yet, the question I would have for us is, have we let greed and pride and envy sever our relationship to God? If we're starting about the biblical principles in our Christian finances, and we're talking about contentment, we first of all have to decide who it is that we're going to serve. And these are the types of questions that we have to ask ourselves. Greed, pride, and envy. Those are not kind of fun words, are they? But yet I would submit to us that probably all of us have experienced them or we've exhibited some of those in our life. Does God get glory out of that? What do you think more often about? God, or money, or possessions? I'm not asking you to raise your hand and tell me, but in the quietness of your own mind, I mean, I know where my mind sometimes goes, and I spend more time than I probably should, and that I'm proud of, focusing on the things of this world, as opposed to keeping our eyes, or my eyes, upon Jesus. It gets back again, for the love of money is the root of all evil. So money is a big issue. It's the issue that becomes between us and God and our ability to serve Him. A brief point that I want to make is that, remember, we talked about that all we have is 100% God's. And sometimes, you know, we want to score whether or not God through our eyes is blessing somebody else by what they have or what they don't have. And that's not, you know, sometimes, you know, the fact that God doesn't entrust us with a lot really is a blessing. And as we go through these and we talk about contentment, you know, the goal of being content no matter what state you're in is, again, it's God whose love that we should be after and His favor. And we need to really understand that the fact that we don't have a lot is not a function of God saying that He doesn't love us. But it may be a function. The greater riches create greater responsibility. And what I mean by that is if you look in Luke, whoever can be entrusted with very little can also be trusted with much. So really, again, it gets back to God knows what we can handle. If we're good at doing something with a little, then maybe we can do good with a lot. And whosoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And I think the point that I want to make here is that God expects of us. If He gives us a lot, I think He expects more of us. Do you agree with that principle? If I give Brother Harlan a dollar bill and I give Sister Joyce a $100 bill, what am I entrusting more with? Now, that doesn't mean that in their heart that their intent with how they're going to use that money is not going to be any different. And that God is the discerner of our hearts. But when we have His possessions, what are we asked to do with Him? To use Him to His glory and honor. It's stewardship. And if we have been given a lot, He wants us to be a steward of a lot. But He also knows, and this is a principle I think is really important, in 1 Corinthians 10:13, it says that God's not going to put us in a situation that we can't make the right choice. So whatever God does bless us with, we can endure whatever temptation Satan may cast at our feet and tempt us with in terms of the decisions and the choices that we make. And I think that's really important because some people, you know, I've just got too much. I don't know what to do with it. Well, God's not going to give us too much. We can make those right choices. Thoughts, comments? 1 Timothy 6:9 says, "But they that will be or desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition." When we're looking on possessions and being rich and the power, it's a trap and it's a temptation that will bring you down. And I think that we've seen that happen in the world by the testimony of men. Can money buy happiness? Short term. Sure. Short term it can.
Can.
But it doesn't last forever. When we remember when we talked about in the book of Ecclesiastes, when we talked about Solomon, you know, man has this quest and this desire to be satisfied and to be content. But it's what we put in our lives that allows that. It's kind of like going and getting your gas tank filled up. You know, if you put the right things in it and you have the right kind of car, it's going to go a lot farther. And I think that if we're putting God in our lives and we're filling our lives and feeding it with spiritual food, you know, that contentment can be lasting and be long-term. But if it's earthly possessions and we covet what other man has, or we covet what people think of us so much above God, it doesn't last long. No matter what happens in our lives, God is going to be there, and He's not going to judge the choices we make. He will judge the choices we make, but in terms of being there and being with us. But man, we sometimes become so consumed by ourselves that we cannot be the type of friend and the support, and we put so much faith sometimes in our friends and even our family that we take our eyes off of God. These next three people, I think, really convey that thought. John Rockefeller, one of the greatest, most richest men in the United States ever. I have made millions, but they have brought me no happiness. What's important about these next three individuals is I understand, and history will report, that they are individuals who had accepted Christ. They were Christians. They accepted the free gift. I was happier when doing a mechanic's job. Henry Ford. Millionaires seldom smile. What are some examples of traps that people fall into when pursuing wealth?
The ends justifies the means.
Implicit in that is that everything may not be above board. Whatever it takes, no matter who I have to walk over.
There's also the idea that if you're not constantly pursuing more, that you are not being aggressive and assertive enough in trying to better yourselves. And so young professionals today, if they're not climbing a ladder somewhere, they're not doing well, and then they put a lot of pressure on people who are content, because they don't understand why they're content.
Yeah, I had somebody tell me more than once early in my career that if you're not changing jobs every 3 to 5 years and going up, that you're not successful. That's a pretty heavy burden to bear when you're young.
People don't think, well, if I'm providing well for my family and my children are fed and clothed and I can go home and be with them every night, but they don't see success in that.
Right.
You're exactly right.
Well, I guess the worst of it is, to me, the money becomes your idol or your god. That's where your time focused. That's everything you've pursued in your life. That's everything you're trying to satisfy and attain. And it takes place of God.
Others?
I think a little kind of further in what Dan said, providing for our families. I have to provide for my family. I have to take care of my kids. I got to provide them a college education. I got to have, more money, so they have a good life and get them. And so we have, plenty for retirement, so we don't have any worries later on. And when that gets out of balance, then it's a trap. It's an easy trap to fall into.
Yeah, think about the number of times that we talk about people trying to provide things. And parents, I've heard to say, well, whether it's education, but even it's things, they try and buy their child's love. And therefore they need the job, and that's how they rationalize it. But that's not what our kids want. They want our love, isn't it? They want to know that we care. They want us to set boundaries. And is not our relationship with God exactly the same way? We tend not to look at it that way because we are allowing this world to define, whether our kids are successful. I mean, we fall into the trap as parents sometimes of saying if we're not providing that our kids are not going to have a good life. The American dream was what? And we're probably living with one of the first generations that the parents, the generation, say, I don't know that I can provide my kids a better life than what I had. But that's been one of the real, I think, detriments of the United States, is that we've gone with the great American dream. And the great American dream is possessions and more. But I think we've got to step back and we're talking pretty global. But are there other traps that some of us fall into? Cars? Technology? Are there things that take our eyes off of God that allow us to keep, that don't allow us to keep our world centered in Him? Anything that does that and keeps us away from serving God or keeping our eyes on Him, you know, can become a stumbling block. We've called them idols before. Typically, idols tend to be possessions or things or activities that consume us. And probably there's not too many of us that haven't experienced that on some level. And maybe there's something that we're dealing with today that allows us not to keep our eyes upon Jesus. Why do you think that wealthy people may have a difficult time getting into heaven?
Self-sufficiency can be a stumbling block to salvation.
Self-sufficiency can be a hindrance. False sense of security, power, self-sufficiency. You know, in Matthew, I believe it's the 19th chapter, this is a biblical principle. Unfortunately, it's a biblical principle. And technology is one of those possessions that I wanted to talk to you about tonight.
I apologize.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
I've got a son flying.
Matthew, the 19th chapter, verses 23 through 26. And we're not going to read that, but the principle there is that it talks about that it's more easy for a camel to go through the eye of the needle than a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Think about that. It's a pretty ominous warning, I think. Because the principle there is that what God desires? No. Do you remember the story about the rich man? And he wanted to be saved. What must I do? And he was willing to do a lot of things. When it got down to, was he willing to walk away from his possessions? Couldn't do it. His identity and who he was so wrapped up in those things. What his neighbors thought, what his family thought, that he couldn't bear the thought of walking away, even though his heart was pulling him towards Christ. That's what stops man today from accepting Christ as his personal Savior. And I've got to tell you, that's at the core of everything that we're talking about is a relationship with God.
You have and you start to rely on that, the harder it is to step out on faith. And I think more and more just in our society that education and these notches in the corporate world, you know, are really where people put their faith, and that's where they lean on it. And it's dangerous the more you get there, because you feel like you should be able to work your way there. You feel like you should be able to take these certain steps, and that's how you earn it. And it needs to be tangible or scientific, but yet to be able to step out and say, you know, I can't see it, touch it, I have to go out on faith and believe it. And yeah. I think that it just takes that next step too.
Yeah, and that's really true, because our human nature is we need to be able to touch it and feel it. That's an excellent point. The definition of faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. God tells us to test Him. Put Him to the test. We're going to talk about that. Next week, we're going to be talking about tithing and offerings and giving. And there's some wonderful scriptures that talk about, you know, put God to the test. And I'm hopeful that some of you, you know, if you have examples as we go through these series of lessons, that you've experienced either a trouble or a trial or a temptation that you think that we could all benefit from, or you've been blessed in a way when you had that faith to be able to step out and say, you know, I'm going to take that step, and I'm pretty confident that I wasn't sure whether or not somebody was going to be there when I put my, was going to be ground to step on. But God's blessed me. Because those are powerful. The more that we can share stories between ourselves of how God has blessed us, or how our lack of faith has actually got us in to problems and challenges in our life, it's an encouragement, and it's also a warning to those that are around us. Other thoughts? Think about this. Do you consider yourself to be rich? I've seen some head shake. Is it a trick question?
I don't know if my answer is a trick answer. I don't know if the question is, but my answer is.
Yeah. I think when we think about rich, we sometimes, again, it's one of those kind of those things that it's not intended to be a trick question, but our mind tends to go through when we hear the term rich. We first tend to think about possessions and money and how we're viewed by others. You know, richness, contentness, being filled, and I'm rich in the context of you know, my relationship with God and what He's done for me. You know, I think it's wonderful. But when you stop and think about richness in terms of possessions, though, I want you to think about this. That if you make more than $1,500 per year, you are richer than 80% of the 5 billion plus people in the United States, or in the world. With material possessions, you're $1,500, 80% of the world is poorer than you. Now, you can debate and you can say, well, it's not inflation adjusted, and you can do all the things, but when you stop and think about, let's take the money aside from it and think about the rest of the world. You know, a lot of these things are kind of out of sight, out of mind. But millions of people, children, die every day because of poverty and because of hunger. Hunger is a real issue in our world. And so, you know, sometimes we need to call time out and stand back and say, first of all, what is my measure? Even in a materialistic world, what is our measure of richness? If you've got a roof over your head and heat on a cold night, you know, you go to an awful lot of countries and they don't have that. And they may have cover, but they certainly might not have electricity. So again, what is it when, even when we talk about being rich, we have a skewed perspective of what richness means in terms of even possessions? You know, we live in a world today, you know, to be content, we didn't used to have choice. You know, choice was one of those things that actually the gentleman who started Macy's was the first one to introduce colored towels. And probably, you know, the worst thing that he could ever done, because now instead of having vanilla ice cream, the first thing was we went to vanilla and chocolate, and then we had vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry. And then you got every color of the rainbow. You know, we paralyze ourselves because we have far too much choice in this country. And we're never content, because if I got a red one, I want a blue one. And if I got the blue one, then I want a pink one. We're never content long enough with what we have. So what brings contentment? How do we achieve it? Contentment grows out of a humility and a trust in God. Remember, this is a competition for our love, for our affections. Psalms 131:1, David said, "My heart is not proud, O Lord. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters of things too wonderful for me. David, when he wrote this, had his eyes on God. My heart is not proud, O Lord, my eyes are not haughty. He had his eyes upon God. Contentment grows out of humility and trust in God. Contentment grows out of devotion to Christ and eternal values. There's going to be some common themes over the next several weeks that we're going to talk about, because they are principles. The Old Testament talks about line upon line and precept upon precept. There are things that are repeated a lot of times over and over and over again. And I always used to ask myself, well, why is that? And unfortunately, it's because we tend not to get it. We have to hear it, or we have to experience it. We talked about this first last week. No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. It's about a competition for what? Love. For the root of all evil is, for the love of money is the root of all evil. Money itself is not bad. We wouldn't have this wonderful building. We wouldn't have a full-time pastor. We wouldn't be able to sponsor missionaries. We wouldn't be able to have heat and lights if it weren't for money. But it's what we do with the money that God's concerned about. Questions, comments on this? First Corinthians 6:6. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Material gain? No, not necessarily. See, sometimes we also expect that every time if we do something with our money, we always think, well, it's going to come back to us multi. Well, we sometimes think it's going to come back to us, if I give a dollar, I'm going to get $2 back. That's how we score it. But you know, when we give money, and we give it with the right heart and the right spirit, then we're going to see what the blessings are. We're going to understand what contentment is. But when we expect something when we give, we've already gotten our blessing. But there's a point here that I think is really important to make, that contentment is not complacent. See, sometimes we want to say, well, I'm not going to be passionate. I'm not going to worry about, you know, improving myself or setting goals. And we talked about, you know, why is it difficult for a wealthy person to be able to get into heaven? Is it more difficult? Does that mean we should just throw our hands up and say no? Job was a very, very wealthy man. God will bless us materially. But again, he's not going to give us more than what we can have, what we can control, and we can be good stewards of. But when he gives it to us, he expects us to use it to his glory and his honor, to further his kingdom, to further, I believe, his great commission that he gave to the church. That all would come to know the free gift, the sacrifice that Christ gave on the cross when he died, was buried, and rose again. That's what this is about, in my mind, is lost souls. God has entrusted us. He's only asked us to use a portion of what he's given us. Complacency is often defined as contented to a fault. Complacency is often defined as contented to a fault. Contentment without ambition is complacency. We should be ambitious, folks. We should be passionate about something. I suggest to you that we should be passionate about our service to God. And that's what this is about, is putting that foundation in God and putting ourselves in a position to where we can be content, but at the same time, be passionate about furthering His kingdom. And when we can do that, you know, don't you get excited, those of us who are in the church, when you see people come in, when you see visitors come in and be among us? Doesn't that excite you? But they're coming in because they have a need, just like we come in because we have a need. And we need to be there for them, and we need to create an environment that would be pleasing to the Lord, that's inviting. Paul, Apostle Paul, I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through Him. Who's Him? Through Christ, who gives me strength. Paul was not a complacent man. He was passionate. What was he passionate about? Winning souls for Christ. If you go back, I would encourage you to read this. Again, always look at the context of what was being talked about. But he felt blessed, and he was giving encouragement to individuals who had given of themselves. They didn't have a lot, but they gave him what they had because their heart was in the right place. Because what they were wanting to do was to see him be successful, because they wanted to see lost souls saved. Does it all of a sudden feel like all of a sudden maybe I've kind of lost sight of what we're talking about, Christian finances? It's so important that we have the foundation and we understand what is it about. As Christians, what is it about? It's not about a bigger, better, faster, prettier. It's about those relationships with our kids. It's about being examples. It's about sometimes making sacrifices so that others can see that we make sacrifices, because that becomes an example and an inspiration for somebody who maybe is struggling with something. And when they see other people be able to make sacrifices and tough choices that the world might not make, it can be an inspiration to them. It's not always sometimes what we say, it's what we do. Remember, actions speak louder than words. So how do we get past greed and pride and envy? I think one thing we can do is we can acknowledge we've got a problem with it. Each one of us in our hearts knows where we struggle. I mean, this is a very common principle. First of all, it's a biblical principle. You have to confess something and then turn from it. Repent and turn away. And if we're really trapped up into materialism and finances and things of that nature, you got to acknowledge that you got a problem of it. call time out, and then you can repent. And what does repent mean? Turn. About face. Don't put yourself in a position that if you have a problem that every time that you go to the store that you can't stop picking stuff up or you're going to buy one of everything, then don't put yourself in those types of temptations. You know, we talk about those things, whether, you know, we talk about it with alcohol and drugs, you know, the things that we kind of maybe kind of far over here, but we're talking about things that are much more mundane than that, things that create a stumbling block for us in our service to God. Count. What do I mean by count? Count your blessings. Absolutely. Absolutely. I would challenge you to take, you know, 5 minutes and write down 20 things that you feel blessed for. You know, some people kind of go, that's kind of corny, you know. I tell you, when you stop and you stand back and you have enough time to do self-reflection and list those things out, it's not uncommon for you to go away with a little different view and a little different perspective about how you are blessed.
I find it almost embarrassing when we do that. Because, you know, God has blessed you so much and you can see some other people suffering too. It's nothing that I've done.
Yeah.
That's right.
Avoid. We talked about this. Avoid those things in your life that you know are going to pull you. We all have them. But you know, one of the other things that's wonderful is that, and that I think is really important, and remember one of the principles that we talked about, you know, in a relationship, you know, with your spouse. These are the types of things that you need to talk about. These are where relationships can come into problems. As if you're not standing back and counting the blessings. If one spouse is counting, you know, how far up the ladder you're moving and how quickly, or you need this, or I need to be doing that. You know, Brother Harlan, you know, had a wonderful series on relationships. And again, finances is one of those key aspects of relationships. That can become a real divider and can pull you down. And there's not a lot of contentment in a home that's not united on this topic. Brother Harling had a wonderful message this morning about prayer. Take it to God. He wants to go to work for you. Give. Why do you think I put give up there, or why it's up there?
Greed has to do with keeping it. It's all about me, me, me. Sometimes it's not sometimes, but usually it's not about us. And giving helps us see other people's needs.
It does feel good when you give. With the right heart, for the right reasons.
And God may bless us in order to provide the needs of others.
Right. And we're going to be talking about that in coming weeks, about giving. Because God does make some wonderful promises to us. Contentment. Can a man be poor if he is free from want, if he does not covet belongings of others, if he is rich in the possession of God? Rather, he is poor who possesses much, but still craves for more. So in summary, the last 2 weeks we've talked about money, and that it's a wedge between God and man. It's a biblical principle. We've talked about everything that we have, and everything in this world is God's, 100%. And we talked about stewardship, that He's given us the trust. He's entrusted to us, and everything that we have is His. And today we talked about contentment. And contentment to me is just one of those rock-hard principles that we have to challenge ourselves to look for contentment, not in possessions. It's about a competition for love. Love of money, love of things, or love of God. And I can tell you that's a fork in the road. But if we take and put our love towards God, because He loved us and He wants that relationship with us, we can endure the stumbles and the trips and the falls and the heartache that will come with finances, because inevitably they will. Inevitably they will. This is not about saying that if you put all your eggs over here with God, like we should, it doesn't mean that we're not going to ever have a problem with finances. You know, Job lost everything. But Job was content. In spite of the fact that he had friends, so-called, that kept saying, Job, just confess that you're sinning here. Because he'd lost everything, and in their eyes, that meant that he was not in favor of God. God wasn't showing him favor. And yet, he wouldn't say it. Because his relationship was not with them, it was with God. And that was the principle that he was standing on. So the principle of contentment can get us through an awful lot of tough times, with a lot or with a little. Any last comments? I appreciate all of you coming. Next week we're going to talk about tithing and offerings and giving. So that'll be the two topic or the three topics that we'll discuss next week. We probably got about two more weeks of talking about these biblical principles, putting the stakes in the ground, and then we'll move into talking about some of the tools and things that I believe can allow us to manage our resources, God's resources. Okay. Shall we all stand?